It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 39. Apologies if you hear sound in the background. I'm actually down in my office in the church and there are lots of people just driving past on the cobbled streets, so you may hear some background noise. A lot again going on in the world. We're not going to look at this week, but we could. Kim Jong-un and Vladimir Putin meeting in Vladivostok. Or the somewhat bizarre and spectacular rise of the Brexit Party in the United Kingdom, or the threat by the Scottish Government to hold another independence referendum. We tip here, by the way, it's not going to happen, it's posturing. There's a party conference coming up. But let's begin by looking at, I think, obviously, the biggest story of the week, and that is the bombings and killings in Sri Lanka. Here's what the Archbishop of York had to say about it.
Any group is totally unacceptable. We've got to do what I think Cardinal Malcolm Ranjiti has said in Sri Lanka, that he's condemned the attack, but also asked Christians to refrain from taking any retributory steps against their Muslim brothers. Because for me, to respond to violence with violence increases darkness on a night already devoid of stars. So the flag we need to...
Now, you've got to say that... You know, well, we're for peace. And the non-retaliation aspect is extremely important. The Sri Lankan government is very worried about retaliation against the 10% of the population who are Muslims. But they're not worried about retaliation from the Christians. They're worried about retaliation from the Buddhist Sinhalese majority. And that is because there are, believe it or not, this sounds strange to Western ears who are taught that Buddhism is cuddly and nice, but there are Buddhist extremists as well. But what I'm particularly interested in, apart from just the absolute devastation and horror of it, is the way that this is reported. And I wrote an article for Christian Today, which again we put the link to, on what it tells us about our culture and about our society. Now, please don't misunderstand me. This is not about being paranoid. But let me just give you a couple of examples. Here's Hillary Clinton after the Christchurch massacre. My heart breaks for New Zealand and the global Muslim community. We must continue to fight the perpetuation and normalization of Islamophobia and racism in all its forms. White supremacist terrorists must be condemned by leaders everywhere, and so on. So that's very clear, isn't it? This was an attack on the Muslim community. It's about Islamophobia. We know who to blame. Here's Hillary Clinton after, you know, a massacre that killed 350 people, more than six times what happened in Christchurch. On this holy weekend, for many faiths, we must stand united against hatred and violence. I'm praying for everyone affected by today's horrific attacks on Easter worshippers and travellers in Sri Lanka. Now, in one sense, there's nothing wrong with that, but you contrast the two, and you begin to realise there's a lot wrong with it. For example, it's not a holy weekend for many faiths. Easter weekend is for Christians. That's just the way it is. It's like Ramadan, and it's not a holy month for many faiths. It's for Muslims. And of course, we've got to stand united against hatred and violence. But everyone affected. Why can't you say Christian, Hillary? You have no problem with the global Muslim community. What about the global Christian community? See, these were churches that were bombed and attacked. And even the hotels who were bombed and attacked, they were for Easter brunches that people were there to celebrating Easter. Easter worshippers, what are those? People who worship Easter? People who worship on Easter? Again, it sounds fairly innocuous, but why is it impossible? Now, I don't think she sat down and deliberately done this. I think it just reflects a mindset and an attitude which is prevalent in the culture. You know, maybe another thing, just in terms of the commentary. A friend of mine, Steve McAlpine, in Perth in Australia, pointed this out, which I hadn't noticed, but it is actually true. Alessandra Ocasio-Cortez, you know, the bright, young, shining star of the new left in America. What did she say about it? Nothing. Literally, nothing. After Christchurch, there were 14 tweets. She continually tweets. But after a massacre of 350 people, not a word. I think that silence itself speaks volumes. Which brings me on to another terrorist act. Oh, by the way, just before we go on to that, do have a look at Giles Fraser's article in The Guardian on Christian persecution, the persecution of Christians. But Lyra McKee was a 29-year-old journalist in Northern Ireland who was killed by a group called the Real IRA, who incidentally were then able to parade down O'Connell Street in Dublin in some kind of commemoration or celebration. There's been a real pushback against that. And at the funeral, which was attended by the Taoiseach of Ireland, leaders, political leaders in Northern Ireland, including Arlene Foster, Theresa May, and others, the priest said this:
"I commend our political leaders for standing together in Craigan on Good Friday. I am, however, left with a question. Why in God's name does it take the death of a 29-year-old woman with her whole life in front of her
I think he was brave in what he said, Martin McGill, Father Martin McGill. And I think it's a really good question. Why does it take death sometimes to bring people together? Isn't that true in a lot of areas in life as well? Sometimes it's only a death that wakes us up and sobers us. Now, Lyra McKee has got a lot of publicity. There have been lots of other deaths in Northern Ireland and lots of deaths throughout the world. But why does it take death? Again, as a Christian, I'm going to argue ultimately it's the death of Christ, which is the solution for us all. But we need to listen, and we need to understand what's going on in our cultures. Here's a question for us. Or actually, here's a question for my secularist friends, my atheist friends. Do you really believe that if the church is removed from society, that we're going to have a more peaceful society? Well, you may find out, you may get your way, because you're exulting in this at the moment. In the decline of the church. But is the church declining? There are statistics in the United States which suggest that while church membership is declining, what we call the intensity or the commitment is not. And it's admitted that the United States is in the Western world an outlier. But you also find that there is decline. For example, there's a report on the churches in Edinburgh which suggests that now less than 1% of the population actually attend, and of course the secular society were rejoicing at that. And in my own nation of Scotland, is it the case that when we leave Christianity, we are going to enter into some kind of secular, rationalistic, scientifically based nirvana, where all is peace and love and science? No. Paganism, amongst other things, will return. And in our local newspaper, the permission has been granted for a farm on the outskirts of Dundee to become a pagan worship site. I think that is where we're heading back to. Now, in that regard, let's just look at even things like the state of the church in Australia. Listen to this about Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister, who's currently undergoing an election campaign.
Both leaders of the major parties have taken time off the campaign trail to attend Easter Sunday services today. Prime Minister Scott Morrison was at the Horizon Church in his local Sutherland Shire in Sydney. He was joined by his wife and daughters at the Pentecostal service and took part in the church's sing-along celebrations. Mr. Morrison told reporters afterwards that Easter was a time for hope.
Today is all about hope. And that's what we've been celebrating this morning.
Now, he attended church on Easter, in a great place, actually. The Shire, they call it. No, this is not Hobbitland. This is Sutherland Shire. And it's not in the far north, where I used to live, in Sutherland in Scotland, but obviously named after that. It is Sutherland Shire in the southern suburbs of Sydney. And just one of the things that intrigued me about that, I mean, he was accused of engaging in Nazi-style salutes. If you belong to a church which raises its hands in worship, some people do, you know, according to the Bible says, lift up holy hands and so on. Well, you probably don't get too much of that in many Presbyterian churches, although occasionally it's been known here in St. Peter's. But sometimes I've gone to charismatic rallies, and yes, there is the whole almost Nazi-style arm up at the 45-degree angle and so on. But it's not Nazi worship. It's people lifting their hands. And there are numerous ways of doing that. But it's intriguing and an interesting commentary on our culture, or at least the Australian culture, that people can make that kind of jibe just when someone goes to worship. Incidentally, I don't think they would make it about Muslims. But let's move on to almost what's become a new religion, and that is the kind of, and it's an apocalyptic religion, by the way, that is the kind of extinction rebellion, environmentalism, and so on. Now, as Christians, let me say, first of all, we should be concerned about the environment because we are stewards of God's creation. We're not here to destroy it, and I think we should be concerned about climate change. But there is this almost kind of religion that's occurred. Now, let me talk first of all about the Swedish girl Greta. Now, please don't mock her and don't attack her. She is a child. She is autistic. And to comment on her tone, her manner of speaking, or anything else is, in my view, just entirely wrong. And in many ways, she is to be admired. However, what is not to be admired is the way that she's being used and abused by people for their own political agenda. She's not a leader. She's not leading this. She's a pawn in the game. And one of the people who's manipulative like that is Emma Thompson.
I am so proud and thrilled to be part of Extinction Rebellion, the new movement that has come up behind all the old ones, you know, that I've been part of since I was 16 years old. A movement that's telling it like it is and saying to government, look, there is no more time. You can't lie and you can't stall any longer. And we will occupy...
If I did a Hypocrite of the Week award, this would be to Emma Thompson. Get this, this is not comedy, this is real. She flew in first class from the west coast of America to protest about people flying. She flew in to take part in a protest which was designed to stop people, ordinary people, leaving Heathrow for their Easter holidays. She flew in and she lectured us about this may be hard and convenient that we disrupt your travel, you know, bizarrely stopping trains, which are meant to be better for the environment than cars. But she said, it may be hard and inconvenient, but we have to do this. But she doesn't know any hardship and inconvenience. When challenged on flying first class, she was asked if she'd fly any other way, and she responded, swore and said, no, of course not. Don't be ridiculous. Now that's hypocrisy. And where this panic leads us, you know, we're being told in 12 years, the planet's finished, we're done. And so we've now got this birth strike stuff where people are saying, we're not going to have any children. It kind of reminds me of religious people that, you know, we've got apocalyptic Muslims who are prepared to blow themselves up. We've got Christians sometimes who say, oh, the world is so bad and everything's going so wrong that I don't know if I want to bring children into this world. Well, now we've got this apocalyptic religion, environmental religion, which is what I think it is. And they're saying that, you know, the world's going to end in 12 years. I don't think it is. Only God knows when the world's going to end, but it's not. I don't think it's going to be in 12 years. But to say, don't have any children, that shows the extremes at which they're at. I mean, we combine all these things, religion and terrorism and environmentalism, and what do you end up with? You end up with, actually, the Christchurch bomber who attacks a religion, Islam. As far as we know, he didn't protect any or profess any particular religion, but he certainly professed to be an extreme environmentalist and said that there were too many people on the planet. Well, one way to stop people on the planet is, of course, to kill them. And to kill especially children in the womb. One third of abortions in England and Wales of women aged between 20 and 24, figures came out this week, result in abortion. Now you need to think about what that means, because it means really that the law is being broken in thousands and hundreds of thousands of cases. Why? Because in the United Kingdom, abortion is illegal. It is only permitted in exceptional circumstances. And the number one reason is the risk to the mother and child would be greater if the birth were to take place than if the birth were to be terminated. Now think about that standard for a moment. 99% of abortions would not occur. But what is happening is abortion is increasingly being used as some kind of contraceptive. And that is utterly appalling. I've become a granddad again today, and this week rather. And my grandson was born a month premature. He's tiny, tiny. He's doing well, by the way, so is his mother. But you know, there are people, politicians in the United States, the state of New York, who'd say, do you know that kid, when I look at that wee baby, I think, in New York, it'd be legal to kill him. It's just horrendous. Well, and other people think it's horrendous too, and young people think it's horrendous too. And so a group of students in Aberdeen wanted to set up a pro-life student group, and they were banned by the student union from doing so. Now, we put a link to that, but you can look and see the case that's being fought, because this is out and out discrimination. And speaking of discrimination, let's go on to the Transmania, which we didn't say much about last week. What can I say? I've put a whole bunch of links to content to different things, far too many for me to comment on. Just let me say that the teacher, think of the teacher who was fired for protesting the pro-transgender lesson at her son's Christian school, fired for that. There are other cases of people who've mentioned something on Facebook and they've lost their jobs. Think of how in Brighton, schools are start giving out gender pronoun stickers to students. Or in Tasmania, birth certificate gender laws have now just been passed that you can change your birth certificate. Even though your birth certificate is telling the truth about it, you can change it to tell a lie. Think about the case of a man called Mark who threatened to kill a mother and child and is now being locked up with women. And then think about this. There is a rift within the Scottish government, within the SNP, about this issue, where the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, is all for trans rights, and yet the majority of women in her cabinet are not. Or at least they're for trans rights in the sense of, you know, supporting and helping trans people, but what they are not in favour of is the proposed Gender Recognition Act, whereby I, as a man, could just simply state, I'm a woman, and that's it. There's nothing medical, no assessment, or anything along those lines. It really is an absolute mess. I mean, if you want to know how wacko this has gone, take this report from Glasgow City Council, who are now allowing cross-dressing men to use female changing rooms at sport facilities like swimming pools and so on. They acknowledge that some visitors may feel uncomfortable at the presence of someone whom they think of being of the opposite sex being in their changing room, whom they think of being. The guidance tells staff that men who, quote unquote, feel more comfortable expressing themselves in feminine clothing should be allowed to use female changing rooms. What about, well, interesting, isn't it, that it doesn't mention women who feel more comfortable in male changing rooms? Now, as I say, there is no way that my daughter is going into a public facility where a man comes in and changes in front of her. No way. It's, yeah. Oh my goodness. Look, this intolerance and madness comes in other ways as well. Last week we told you, we gave you an article about a woman, a blogger, who was complaining that libraries were too white. Well, you could argue that's one outlier. No, it's not. The Library Journal, which advertises itself as the most trusted and respected publication for the library community, now wants to ban books for whiteness. Library collections continue to promote and proliferate whiteness with their very existence. No. You've got to be joking. But that is the case. We are now talking... What are we talking about? You're talking about fascism. We are talking about just the destruction of so much of our culture. And here, what we're talking about is burning books. No thanks. Okay, let's just do a couple of other things. Listen to this from Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Anti-Islam comments are deeply disgraceful. And as I pointed out, they're actually against the Catechism of the Catholic Church. So on all grounds, these comments are wrong. I oppose them, I disapprove of them, I'm against them. I completely reject anti-Islamic posts.
Now, I think here his normal sense is moving away from him. What he's trying to do is distance himself from the kind of anti-Islamic comments which, you know, condemn all Muslims, say they're all terrorists and all that kind of stuff, which would be entirely wrong, and I completely agree with that. But that's not actually what he says. What he says is that anti-Islam comments are deeply, wrong, disappointing, and against the Catechism of the Catholic Church. Two things. By that standard, I'm not allowed to critique Islam. And also, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, he's got that wrong. Because the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches what to Muslims is blasphemy. That Jesus is the Son of God. That Jesus is God. And to Muslims, that is to Islam, that is absolutely abhorrent. That is, in the Quran, a crime that's worthy of death. Now, is Rees-Mogg saying that we are not allowed to critique that? I think he's lost the place in this one. Well, let's do a little bit of sport. The death was announced this week of Billy McNeil, the Celtic captain, who I guess his proudest moment in terms of sport was his lifting with Celtic of the European Cup in 1967, the first British team to do so. Well, let me just say about this. I think what's extraordinary about that particular story, McNeil seems to have been a solid man and a good man in lots of ways, and certainly an excellent sportsman and a great leader of men on the field. But what strikes me about that Celtic team, every single player was born within 30 miles of Glasgow. Born and raised. Every single one. I think the way that football has gone, especially, and the way that sport is going, we're never ever going to see that again. And I don't think it's because we're becoming better. I think there's less community. And I think, actually, in terms of football, it's become less a working man's or a working class sport. And to me, that's a sad thing. Now, I want to point you to another podcast. Finally, let me do this. By the way, if you wish to support Quantum, please feel free to do so on Podbean, on the fundraiser there. Really, really appreciate it for those of you who have done so. And I do hope to put out a private podcast to those of you who are supporters. I meant to do it this week. Apologies, having promised it last week, but we'll try and get it done this week. I do want to recommend another podcast, which is Nick Robinson, and especially this one where he does an interview with Steve Brady.
Look, my politics, I usually say classical liberal, but that's because libertarian is a word that's got a bad connotation for so many. But you know, the truth about my politics is I'm a Christian libertarian, and that's why I'm a conservative.
A Christian is another crucial part of understanding Steve Baker, isn't it? You're a
born-again
Christian.
Well, people keep asking me about it, so I suppose. I mean, I'm not in politics to preach the gospel, and I'm absolutely committed to the idea that public policy must be conducted on secular grounds.
But it's very important to who you are.
Well, if you're going to be a Christian, then you need to understand what it's about. It's about the eternal, and it's about loving one another. And so, even when I
Lots of people are Christian. Not many people have this label, born again Christian.
Well, I don't generally use that label.
What does it mean?
Well, I'm not really here to explain the theology of that, but I would recommend anybody interested went and spoke to their local minister about that. But it in the end, it means to be, in a sense, the Christian doctrine is to enter into new life. But that, let me put that, I tend to think about these things very deliberately in an earthy way, not a spiritual one. What it means is that even when somebody curses me, I seek to bless them. I seek to treat people kindly even when they're wicked to me. And that's what we're under a command to do. And, you know, I am definitely an imperfect person, as we all are, but it's about the heart you have and the way you seek to relate to others. So
now, there's a warning here for me, because what I knew of Steve was very little. And I kept hearing this phrase like hard man of Brexit, and the whole impression given was someone right-wing, intransigence, you know, and so on. Well, it's a warning for me, and it's a lesson for every one of us. Don't go by the impressions given in the media, especially gossip. Because when you listen to Steve Brady being interviewed, I was stunned by this in lots of ways. Not least because he describes himself as a Christian, and he accepts the born-again, and he explains that. I was really, really impressed, and I learnt my lesson, and I do pray for him, and I'm always saying we need more Christians in political leadership. Well, there's at least one, or in fact several, in the United Kingdom, and I was very, very grateful to hear that. And I hope and pray that wherever you are, whatever job you are in, that if you are a Christian, God will use you in terms of you will be salt and light. And I hope and pray that if you are not yet a Christian, by the time you come and listen to this next week, you will be. May God bless you all. See you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand, because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens, trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness, and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky, or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah.
Yep. We live in this world, not of it. Not if he's getting run from it.